Streaming live where?
We are streaming live right now on LinkedIn and YouTube. Everybody, listen. Time to put that cape and goggles on, because we have in my opposite chair, Joanna Brandy. She is going to light up our lives with, I mean, listen, I've been talking to this lady for a long time, and we have developed a great relationship. She is a chief happiness officer. Listen, if what do we need in our lives right now? We need a little bit more happiness. We do. And we want to go beyond just customer satisfaction. We want to go beyond those types of things. So I could think of no one more perfect to invite. Hello, Joanna. How are you doing today?
I am amazing today because it's still Happy New Year.
Yes, I'm in love with that tiara. That is fabulous, darling.
I have been known to wear it until February 12th or 13th. Only because when you think about it, it's still a new year for a long time. And did you notice how many times you said the word happy in the first few hours of the new year? How many people did you see? How many people did you talk to? What'd you say?
Me? Okay, yeah. You might be disappointed, but my wifey was a little sick, so we stayed home. We were in bed.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. You're the only person I spoke to that was sick over the holiday. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, she's fine now, but it was not a night to go out.
I wasn't out myself, but the next day, I mean, you know, stop at the gas station and stop here and see people here. And I've actually been really enjoying, say, Happy New Year. Because it's a wish of happiness.
Isn't that the best?
Yeah.
What do you think happens to people when they're both giving and receiving that Happy New Year? Like, what takes place inside of us?
Oh, chemicals, really good ones. So you get more dopamine, you get a little bit of serotonin, you get more T cells, which build your immune system, so you don't get sick as often. That's the thing that fascinates me when I started studying happiness was I have always been sort of a secret scientist. I've always loved science, but never pursued it. Like in school, I loved it, but never went down that path, went down, you know, psychology and that kind of stuff. But when I found out how much science is involved in the science of happiness, I was joyful. Because we're changing body chemistry. Whenever we as human beings interact with another, we have the opportunity to give them a dose of dopamine or oxytocin or serotonin or endorphins, depending on the situation, whether there's movement involved. But the thing is that they're just happy chemicals. And what the happy chemicals do is they help us live longer and better. So they help us be healthier. So I think if people really understood the result of the chemistry that especially leaders, I teach mostly leaders these days, if they really understood the impact, or when they really understand, because that's what happens, when they really understand the impact they have on other people's bodies. You know, you walk into your boss's office and the boss has a frown on her face, or, you know, or she comes out and she's about to say something and she's using that voice. What happens? Your body immediately says, ooh, fight or flight. There's a bear. You know, the saber-toothed tiger is about to jump out of the tree. We haven't gotten an upgrade, honey. 250, 300,000 years. They didn't upgrade the hardware. The hardware still works the same way. And when we feel under threat for any reason whatsoever, including picking up this thing and having it on the news channel when you don't want it on the news channel, and seeing something horrible happening at the other side of the world, the body takes that in.
Yeah, we can't separate ourselves from that. We are not separate from the things that we see, consume, feel, or interactions with people.
Not at all. Which is why I think organizations, especially because they have so much opportunity, you know, to make someone's day, to make someone's day more pleasant, to make someone's day happy. I've been for some reason, over the holiday season, on the phone a little bit more with customer service departments. There's been a few things I've had to do, and I feel very sorry for those people, because by the time you actually get them, you really want to yell. Yeah. So I've had to sit here and say to myself, you can't do that to these poor people. They're here to take care of you. You have to be nice. But it's a discipline, because instinctively, when we don't get what we want, push that button and push that button and push that button, we go into frustration.
Yeah.
And then we're a customer service rep at the other end of the phone. So one of the things I've noticed is that when you treat them really well, they're deeply appreciative.
Yeah.
And I've gotten in many conversations because I ended up with a new phone somewhat unexpectedly, and I wasn't psychologically prepared for the new phone. I wasn't up for all the stress that goes with trying to figure out how you swipe instead of push a button. So, yeah. But, you know, I think as we really observe our own behavior, and see the places that we get frustrated, see the things that make us angry, see the things that give us pleasure, see and experience the things that give us joy, we have the opportunity to make more of those choices during the day.
Yeah.
You know, in the world that I came from, which is customer loyalty, we talk about the moments of truth. And any time that someone has the opportunity to make a judgment about the quality of care or service that you're giving them is a moment of truth. And at that moment of truth, you have three choices, actually. You can deliver a moment of mediocrity and be like everybody else. You can deliver a moment of misery and react physiologically, and instead of with your whole self, or you can deliver a moment of magic. And I think at every interaction, we have that opportunity. And when we deliver that moment of magic, when we are aware of how we can make someone's day a little brighter, recognize them for the good work they do, when we do that, what we're doing is we're building an emotional bank account.
Yeah.
So as we as leaders build those emotional bank accounts little by little by little, when there is a problem, when there is a crisis, when there is a need for that person to go out of their way, to go the extra mile, to do the extra thing, they're willing.
Yeah.
Because they have the reserve. What's happening now is that the HR numbers are scary as hell. They say 70 to 80% of people are burned out.
Ooh, 70 to 80. That is not good.
No, that is not good. That is not good. So we don't have, and some of it had to do with COVID. A lot of it had to do with COVID. A lot of it had to do with the distraction over, you know, do we work at home? Do we not work at home? Do we have to come back in? A lot of people don't want to come back in. A lot of people, and I'll tell you about this project I'm working on in a moment. A lot of people discovered that when they worked at home, they didn't have to put up with the little indignities that they have to put up with in the office.
Yeah.
Even though they put up with them when they were there, when they were not present any longer, people felt better. They felt healthier. They felt stronger. They felt more self-assured. But when you have, let's say, a boss, you know, that belittles you, even in tiny little ways, you know, if there's even just a small amount of toxicity in that culture, it takes the life out of you over time. And when people realized that by working at home, they didn't have to put up with that crap, if you will, they didn't want to go back.
Why would you? Why would you want to go back into an environment that stresses you out? I mean, I remember back in the days when I worked in corporate. It was a long time ago. But back in those days, knowing that my boss was angry with me, or even we have to talk later, RJ, even that, I'm on pins and needles from that moment until the moment that we actually speak. How mentally prepared am I to have a real conversation? I'm not. I'm just waiting for the bullet at that point. You know what I'm saying? yeah, we can, it does not surprise me. And, you know, the other thing that you and I have talked about is quiet quitting. You know, I'm here, but I'm not here anymore. And gosh, tons of people doing that as well.
I'm also starting to hear about people that are holding more than one remote job. So they sort of, they quiet quit everywhere. So they've got more than one job and they do half-assed on both jobs, but they take in two salaries.
Boy, it appears to me as such a waste of life. You know, but I can understand why there would be people who think that that's a better deal than going in somewhere.
Well, especially if they had been in a toxic environment. Yeah. I don't think we realize how deeply that kind of toxicity impacts someone's well-being. I'm studying now to be I'm a certified happiness coach, a happiness officer, but I'm studying now to be a certified chief well-being officer. So I'm going broader in understanding of what well-being at work looks like.
Yeah.
Based on the new Surgeon General's report, which is scary as hell, that about 84% of people say that the mental illness they're dealing with was caused by their job.
What kind of management culture do we have to produce those numbers, Joanna? Well,
you know, we have five generations in the marketplace. Five. Not four, five. Five. In order to get my certification, I have to work on a project. And I'm working on a project with a young lady from Rutland, Vermont, who already has an organization that is all about belongingness and combating loneliness. And I don't know whether I'm at liberty or not to give you the name of the organization, so I won't. But I'm helping her expand that project that she's doing. She's a nonprofit to include businesses and to include, more nonprofits and to include state agencies and things like that so that people feel better at work. But when she told me about the entrenched culture, I'm like, you know, because there are a lot of I hope I don't offend anybody here. There are a lot of 72-year-old white men who haven't yet adjusted to the fact that the workplace is very different. It's never going back.
No.
Ever. And I think one of the things that I built into some of my programs is this discussion about the generations and how they feel about business and how they feel about culture. And the younger the people, the more they want to be involved in the decision making because the decision impacts them.
Yeah.
The older people are looking at it from the old top-down military model that was developed to get people out on the battlefield, which is the model we've been using in business forever. So it's hard to look at all those boxes. I did a job yet. For a government agency recently. And when I looked at the organizational chart, I was like, oh my God, oh my God, no wonder, there's sort of, you look at the boxes and you go, yeah, well, it's not hard to see why there's a communication problem.
Yeah.
Sometimes it really does take someone from the outside to come in and put some perspective. So, I spent so many years as a consultant, in addition to speaking, I would speak, but then people would invite me in to fix things that were going on in their organization. And I worked a lot in the catalog space, companies like that with their big call centers. And I would literally just walk around with a yellow pad and have conversations with people. And there's one phrase that I heard over and over again, year after year, with the exact same words. And that phrase was, how come they never notice when I'm doing something right, but when I'm doing something wrong, they're all over me.
Yeah.
And then often someone would say in public. Mm. So not only were they all over them about doing something wrong, but they said it out loud. They did it in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And I found, and I think this is how I got into leadership training, that the customer service problem really had to, I ended up walking into the corner office to say, problem's not there. You know, either they didn't have the tools they needed, they didn't have the encouragement they needed, they didn't have the training they needed, they didn't have the structure they needed. There were things that were not needed because supplied, because nobody paid that much attention to the customer service department.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the CEOs that I was working with was a $500 million catalog company, $500 million. And when I was sitting in his office, you know, giving my report, I turned around and said to him, when is the last time you've sat in the customer service department for a few hours? And he looked at me as if I were crazy.
Exactly.
I'm like, well, these are your customers. Don't you want to hear what's going on? No. So, you know, I've just seen so much. So I started developing programs for leaders. I started working more with leaders and less with the people that are on the phones.
Yeah.
Anyway, I still work with leadership in customer service organizations, but it's been a crazy journey.
I'll bet it has. It has changed so much in the past few years with all the different channels that everybody's on and all the different, that's just it's magnificent to me that you know where the problem is. It's, you know, people just view it as it's a cost center. I actually worked with a team. This was years and years ago, but I worked with a team, and the manager came in and said to the customer service department, you are all now salespeople and you have quotas. And unless you make the cost of yourself back, you're going to lose your job. Whoa.
How motivating.
They're not the salespeople. You know, they shouldn't have to worry about quotas. That's the furthest thing, furthest thing from what they should be doing. But yeah, this person was all about the bottom line, and that initiative failed, you know?
Yep. Of course it did. Yeah. I loved when Tony Hsieh was alive, and when Tony Hsieh ran Zappos. I love the stories that came out of there, because if there's anybody that defines happiness in business, it's Zappos.
Yeah.
And no matter what position you came into in the company, you had to sit in the customer service department for weeks. That's how you started. If you were a senior vice president, you started in customer service and you sat there and you listened to calls and you took calls, and it was amazing. And then after, I forget the time, but it was like 4 or 5 weeks of that training, they would offer you $5,000 not to take the job.
Wow.
So they weeded out the people that weren't really serious, because that $5,000 is a sincerely nice chunk of money. They weeded out the people that didn't really want to be there. And when you look at the companies that really do have now, unfortunately, some of the companies like Southwest Airlines, I studied their culture quite extensively. It's changed too much. You know, they varied too much from the owner's original, the owner and the people that came right after him, original vision. And so they're having trouble.
Culture
really needs to be reinforced over and over again. It stems from the values. You and I have had that conversation. It stems from the values. And a lot of people, once they hang those values on the wall, they think everybody gets it. Instead of making it a living document, a living set of principles. I was coaching, there's a young CEO that I coach that I just adore, because he just gets it. He just really gets it. And we have these deep conversations about how the values are being lived and where the values show up, and how to recognize the people that are doing a great job of living those values. Because that's, I think, moving forward, where it's at least how I teach, it's really about your values and how you're living them, and then how the customer experiences them through your products, your service, your advertising, your marketing, all of it.
Even for me, as you know, I'm not a big organization. I have some team members, but even for me, I know that if I communicate my values correctly, everything else has the chance to fall into line. Like, you know, when getting clients, when dealing with my team members, when, you know, confronting a problem, if I can truly communicate those values, then it seems like everything else kind of snaps too. You know, it falls into place. Okay, here's how we're going to work together because we value this, you know, here's how we're going to go forward with this new product because this is what, you know, but if you don't communicate those, everybody's confused. Do you find that too?
Oh, absolutely. And the communication is not always done with words. The communication is mostly done with actions. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. one of the reasons I left. I was very successful in the corporate world. I ran a division of a large publishing company in New York, and I was very successful. But as the values of the, as the generations, you know, the parents gave the business to the kids, you know how that goes. As the values changed, I literally, we could feel it in my body. I couldn't stand it anymore. It was like, I don't belong to this place anymore. And that was the hardest because I belonged there. I felt that they created a family environment. And, you know, it was wonderful. But then when the Young Bucks took over, and here I am sitting at a sales meeting. In, I guess it was August of the year I left, I'm sitting at a sales meeting and one of the rising stars gets up there and identifies us all as street fighters. You know what we are? We're street fighters. And I'm known as the customer care lady and here's Mr. Street Fighter telling me I got to go punch someone in the nose. It was such a shock to my body that when I came back into, you know, to the office, my assistant looked at me. She said, what happened to you? I said, about 6 months, I'm going to be out of here because I had identified with something entirely different and I could feel it changing and see it changing, but to have it come from the podium that we are something different than I think we are, you know, you can sort of tell I'm a bit more about the love thing than the strength, than the fighter thing. So it was hard to take. It was interesting. But a lot of the models that we first studied when I got there, we were all required to know Clausewitz on war.
Really?
Yeah, because of the marketing, because of the strategy, it was a competitive industry. And we had to understand what Clausewitz, we had to understand it. Now, not to the extent where we got, you know, graded or anything like that, but we needed to understand the marketing strategies behind Clausewitz on war, Sun Tzu, all of it, because it was always a battle.
Wow.
But that's the way people always thought about business.
That's really helping me see some stuff that I hadn't seen before, but I rail a lot against traditional marketing. You know, I do. That is all staged like a battle as well.
Yes. And one of the very large banks that I worked with, even the language, when they discussed talking to a customer, they called it up against a customer. I was up against the customer yesterday and the language was like that. And they had marketing blitzes. All of their language was full of this kind of stuff. And I was on a 2-year project and part of what we were doing there was to find out the customers were angry. We knew they were angry because they closed many, many branches. Yeah. So it was an opportunity to learn more about what the customers were really looking for. So I was there with a partner and we would do these evening. It was quite amazing. We would do these evening cocktail parties and invite the customers in. So we would do a little bit of the training with the customers and that we fed them. And then we would put them in a circle in the middle of the room with my facilitator. And then we would allow one banker to come and come into the circle and ask one question. So they were well, I mean, they were not allowed to get defensive or anything like that. But it was quite amazing because I kept notes. And then I called a management meeting while I was there. I took all these notes and about what the customers had said. And then I took the language I had been hearing and I put them up on two slides. Clearly, they were using war language and the customers wanted them to make love, not war.
Yeah. Do you mind if I steal that from the title of an email? Your customers want you to make love, not war.
Steal it, please. I don't know that I've ever used it, but they do want you to make love, not war.
They do. They want to feel cared about.
And I think in the world we're living out today, where people are burned out, their nervous systems are burned out. The technology is doing us in with all, you know, because we're constantly responding. Unless you have a digital detox at night, unless you have a digital sunset and turn off all these things, all of this is impacting us all the time.
Yeah.
And so people's nervous systems are really short and shorted out. So customers need more from us in the way of positive emotion. And employees need more. That's why I teach positive leadership. Employees need more from us in the way of positive affirmation. It's been determined if you want to run a high performance company, you need 5 times more positive than negative. Whew. 5 times more affirmation, 5 times more focus on questions that really matter rather than what went wrong here. 5 times more of the recognition that we don't give people. And it's actually very easy to do. I've structured this last several years of my life has been structured in teaching this because it's actually very easy to do, but it requires a different consciousness.
It does.
Yeah. Because if you listen to your own self-talk, especially leaders, we're very tough on ourselves. So we're using negative self-talk with ourselves and then have that expectation that by prodding someone with something negative, they're going to move in the direction we want them to go to. And we know that doesn't work, but yet we do it because we do it to ourselves first.
Oh, it's the truth.
Yeah.
How many of us are at war with ourselves?
Yeah. So the first step to positive leadership is self-leadership, is how is it that we have that everything we need? And I just wrote something on that very recently, and it's in my blog at returnonhappiness.com. It's a drop down that says blog. And I wrote it, and then 2 weeks later, I had 2 weeks to think about it. I posted it, and then 2 weeks later I realized I left something out. And what I left out was that, it was all about self-awareness and self-communication and all that. What I left out was self-love. And I was a little nervous to type that. I was a little nervous to go to my audience and say, I gave you this gorgeous piece of work and look what I left out. But one of the most important pieces of resilience, because I'm teaching resilience now as well, is self-compassion.
So if
we don't have self-compassion and we don't have self-love, how do we give that to and how do we lead?
Oh, that's just so far away from how we were brought up.
No kidding.
Force yourself to get better.
Yes.
You have to be good at everything.
Still doing a little bit of, I'm wired that way. I grew up with parents that were first generation Americans and they were both lawyers. They had a small business and you did what needed to be done and you just bite the bullet and you just do it and you must be successful. And that plus Catholic school does a number on it all.
Yeah, I went through Catholic school. Neither they nor I were ever the same, I'll tell you that.
I'm sure they were not the same if you were there. I know that.
Well, one last question for you. And is the e-course that we were talking about at returnonhappiness.com?
No, it's got its own URL, but if you go to returnonhappiness.com, there's a button on the front page, I hope. There's a button on the front page that says get the course, or you have to click over to the second page to get the button for that. But it is at positiveenergizer.com because that's the goal. We want to create leaders who are positive energizers.
Yes.
And I do talk about it a fair amount. The website probably needs a little update. I talk more about customers than I do about employees, but my actual work these days is more about employees than customers. I just don't have the time to, you know what it's like. Redo the website? Oh, God. So, But we got lots of free stuff. If you go to joannabrandy.tv, I have a YouTube channel. And I'm working on making that a little bit more robust. I think I'm going to make a broad sweeping statement here. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think people in my generation are a little less apt to just sit down and have a conversation in front of the camera. So I tend to do it in spurts. And then I get a little burnt out on that. So I'm about to go into another spurt and start recording again because it's really kind of fun.
I love recording. It's ridiculous. Yeah.
I know you do. I know you do. I think there's still a part of me that says, what are you doing? There's nobody out there. Or what if nobody sees it? Or what if that self-censor thing that we're not supposed to pay attention to. But those of us, again, a different generation than you, that self-censor is strong.
Well, it is. And honestly, we could probably spend an hour just on that. Because the role that these things play in our lives, we forget to count the cost of us being at war with ourselves and a lot of times us being at war with each other.
No kid. Well, yeah.
And in business, it's in the cost is in the billions.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We lose employees. We lose customers. We lose productivity. I use some stats in my presentations. I do a lot of work with Vistage, which is the world's largest CEO organization. So I have a lot of statistics. The cost of toxicity is amazing because people, when you're in a toxic environment, you don't want to give anything. You don't want to give and you feel intimidated and your productivity goes way down. It's really awful. So those are hidden costs. Those are hidden costs. And it's a little hard to measure. I've yet to have a client that says, let's measure my employees' happiness before we start. And then let's measure. They want people to be happier, but they actually don't necessarily want to pay for the cost of measuring it.
Ooh, interesting.
Engagement, they're not the same. They're two different things. And now the introduction of this new language around well-being, I'm starting to look at research a little bit differently. What can we find out from these people to understand what would make their experience better? Because when they feel good and show up in all of themselves, I love being at work. I feel so good when I'm here and I've got so much energy when I go home. Because most organizations are draining. There's an energy drain instead of an energy gain. But positive organizations, positive cultures, there's an energy gain, not drain. Because when people are working in their strengths and when they're recognized by their colleagues for working in their strengths and in their creativity, they feel really good when they go home.
Yeah. I know it makes a big difference to me, even though I don't, I am where I work, but it makes a huge difference to me at the end of the day as to what I do at night, depending on how my day was. Was it energizing or was it draining? And if it was draining, what happened?
I'll send you my energy gains or energy drains exercise. And anybody that wants it can use just Joanna at returnonhappiness.com. I just put energy gains and drains. I've got a simple little exercise that when I first did it, wow, I realized that a lot of my energy drains came out of my own head.
Oh, no.
And how I thought the culprit. The culprit, how you think about things, right? My boss looked at me cross-eyed.
Oh, my God. That's almost the toughest stuff is the stuff that's with you all the time. But so, well, we do have to wrap up because we've actually gone over, but I've been so fascinated by talking to you, which always happens in every one of our conversations. Gosh, if you're a leader out there and you've got some disconnect in what you want and what you're getting, it may well be time to take a look at what Joanna's got. That's Joanna at returnonhappiness.com, or just pop over to the website, explore. But it may well be time to do something about it, because in the companies of the future, they don't look much like the companies of the past. And you can either deal with it or you can stick your head in the sand. But call Joanna instead. See what can be happening.
Well, and I got to say one last thing, that if you don't stick your head in the sand, if you make the choice to deal with it, the payoff is beautiful. When they do the stats on the great places to work, the places where this kind of stuff is already put in, their market value is way higher than anybody else's. So there's a payoff. Yeah. There's a payoff.
Beautiful. All right, my friend. I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing with my audience today.
Well, I thank you for inviting me. We have so much fun when we talk. I think it's so cool that we're sharing that energy with other people. We have to find a way to do this on a more regular basis.
We just do. And between you and me, we could probably launch a rocket ship with the amount of knowledge we have. So
let's launch a rocket ship. There we go. I love that idea.
Beautiful. Well, thanks everybody for coming in and giving this a listen. It's a great week. It's a great week for new beginnings. It's a great week for new ideas. It's a great week to figure out a new way to do something. And, you know, until I see you again next week, take care of yourself, take care of each other, and I'll see you in a bot.
Thank you all. Bye-bye, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.